Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington, D.C., that the government does not want you to know and that the mainstream media isn't reporting. And here's something the government really doesn't want you to know, and it's kind of a basic thing. It's how corporations work. Now, I know you think you know this. Or maybe you know that you don't know this, or maybe you know all about it. Here's the thing. Corporations, all right, they teach you, right, are controlled by shareholders. So shareholders decide what corporations do, right? Wrong. Turns out the corporations today are really not controlled by shareholders. You'd think that they're the owners, they get to decide what goes on, but as may not surprise you, given all the scandals we've had, Enron and Tyco and WorldCom, it looks to me like corporations really aren't controlled by their shareholders at all. In fact, it ends up being a revolving door where managers appoint directors who appoint managers who appoint directors, and there's really no one to know what's going on. And in fact, one thing that I want to discuss today is who really is in charge of corporations, how is it that they get all this power, and what can we do to rein them in a bit. My guest is going to be Michael Garland. Now, he is the Corporate Transactions Coordinator for the AFL-CIO, specifically for their Office of Investment. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to work to help shareholders take better control of corporations. After all, about half of all Americans have an investment, a direct investment in the stock market, in some corporation. And for most of the rest of the other half, you've got pension funds, you've got union workers. Virtually everyone depends in some manner on corporate profits. And yet, if we're not watching them, if we're not controlling them, who is? That's my question today. If you want to call in and ask me a question or Mike Garland, feel free to do so. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, toll free, 877-57-SCOOP. Or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Mike, thanks very much for coming on the Inside Scoop.
You're welcome, Mark.
Let me ask you just a basic question, the one that we learn in law school, although in law school I guess they give us some of the caveats here, but certainly something that if you ask a guy on the street who owns a corporation, they'll say, well, the shareholders own it. But do shareholders really control what goes on in corporations?
Well, shareholders do own the corporations, but they don't control what goes on in corporations.
And how is it that, I mean, I think a lot of us understand that the corporate form is basically, well, managers are going to control the day-to-day stuff. But if managers go severely wrong, is it hard for shareholders to try to bring them, and let's say they commit fraud. Let's talk about Enron or Tyco. Is it hard for shareholders to throw the bums out?
Well, in a case where there's clear fraud, you have legal remedies. So I think that at that point in time, though, shareholders have lost a lot of money often, and the horse is out of the barn.
So what if they're just doing a lousy job? And one of the things that struck me about, like, for example, Disney, is that Michael Eisner made tens of millions of dollars at the same time as he lost hundreds of millions for the corporation. And I've often thought, you know, I could lose $100 million, and you'd only have to pay me $1 million to do it. I mean, really, I could lose money. I just go to Vegas, you know, put it all on a table. How is it that our corporate directors and managers are making so much money as they lose hundreds of millions of dollars for corporations?
Well, it's a good question. The theory is that the managers work for the board, and the directors are elected by and held accountable by shareholders.
Okay, what's wrong with the theory in practice?
Well, in practice, and in theory, you know, that's fine. I don't think that shareholders want to be involved in the everyday decision-making of the corporation, but we do have high expectations for the behavior of boards of directors, and the problem, well, there are a whole series of problems, but let's start technically. Most people believe that shareholders elect directors, and in fact, that's largely false.
It's true in a very small corporation, I guess.
Well, in a publicly traded corporation, it is not really true.
Okay.
And let me explain what I mean. Typically, well, first of all, in practice, essentially CEOs pick their directors. And the way a director is elected is he or she is nominated by the board,
right,
and put up for election to shareholders. But as a shareholder, you have two choices when voting on a director. You can vote for that director, or you can do what is called withholding your vote, which is different than abstaining. You actually check a box and say, I withhold my vote from this particular director. However, unless there is something in particular state law, and this is uncommon and certainly not in Delaware where most corporations are incorporated, or in a company's bylaws, a director is elected with a plurality of votes. So shareholders could withhold 99% of their votes from a candidate, and that candidate would still be elected to the board.
What's interesting to me is that this is even less than the old Stalinist elections where you could vote in the Soviet Union, you could vote for or against the head of the Politburo, and or for or against Saddam Hussein, and, you know, they'd find, you know, 99% yes, 1% no, or whatever. In this case, even if the majority of shareholders, in effect, vote no, because no isn't an option, in effect, they withhold their vote, that person still is elected, unless, I guess the shareholders would have to all come to the board meeting, all million of them would have to show up in that hotel room. I don't know how you fit a million shareholders in a hotel room and actually nominate a new candidate there. That would be, I guess, the technical way to actually vote the bum out?
That's right. In a contested election, it is the candidate that receives more votes. So shareholders can put forward candidates, and shareholders today have a legal right to do that. However,
But you have to do it at the meeting, right?
Well, I mean, you can do it by proxy, but it is a very, very costly effort. I mean, for example, last year, a group of dissident shareholders put forward a full slate of dissident directors at a company called El Paso Corporation.
Okay.
And they spent, I think, $8 or $9 million. Their legal fees, you have to do mailings to shareholders.
Yep.
In order to defend their incumbent seats, the company's board spent $11 million.
And they spent the shareholders' money.
Exactly.
Right.
Because they have access to the corporation's proxy statement that gets sent out to all shareholders. So when you run your own directors, you would need to publish your own materials and send them out and hire lawyers. And it's prohibitively expensive, particularly because, you know, for the funds we work with, for example, they're broadly diversified, and while they would benefit from having truly independent directors on these boards, any one fund, the cost involved, even if that director is a highly effective director and increasing shareholder value, the cost benefit just isn't there.
You know, what's interesting to me is the same thing happens politically. Just the other day, Dick Cheney, Vice President Cheney, was down in Arkansas at a Walmart. And he was there supposedly for official business. And while he was there, he basically said 60 separate times how John Kerry was bad and how Bush was good. But he was there for official business. So we taxpayers funded that. I think you find the same thing in corporations. Basically, they're running an election, and we fund it. And one of the things I guess I never realized, and I got to tell you, as someone, whenever I own some shares in corporations, I always withhold the vote on all of them. I do that on purpose because I feel like if ever there's a dissident that gets enough votes, I want to be a part of it. But I tend to, whenever that you have all those initiatives by shareholders, you know, get rid of the golden parachute, cut back on corporate salaries, I always vote for all of those as well. But you know what? My votes never seem to win. Tell me, Mike, is there a structural reason why shareholders' votes like that don't win?
Well, on shareholder proposals, we're seeing more and more majority votes, particularly on proposals to rein in runaway executive compensation.
Yeah.
And I think there are a number of things behind that. Certainly Enron exposed and the scandals that followed all of the weaknesses in our corporate governance system. But also some of the reforms, and some of which, you know, to be honest, the AFL-CIO has been strongly behind and actually initiated. For example, the SEC adopted new rules last year that we petitioned for, which require mutual funds to disclose how they vote their proxies. And when you look at the ownership list of any major corporation, I would say 8 out of 10 of the largest shareholders are the big mutual fund companies. You'll see Fidelity,
sure, makes sense.
Vanguard,
well,
at the top
why don't,
of the list.
Why don't they press their power?
Well, they have historically been extremely passive in proxy voting because they have conflicts of interest. While they are voting their shares on behalf of all of the individual investors whose money they manage.
Right.
And they have a fiduciary duty to cast those votes in the best interest of their investors.
Absolutely.
Fidelity has a separate set of interests in conflict with that, and that is that they are trying to sell services to all the corporations in their portfolio. Fidelity, for example, makes half its revenue from fee-based income selling retirement benefit plan management services to corporations.
So you can't anger a management that's given you all this business, and this, so basically you just feed your shareholders to the lions.
That's always been our assumption of what's taking place. They would never tell people how they voted. Occasionally we've been able to track it, but the mutual fund...
Isn't that public information? How a mutual fund votes? After all, if I'm a shareholder in the Fidelity Fund, don't I have a right to find out how they voted on their proxy?
Well, we've always believed, certainly the pension funds we work with, who are governed by ERISA and who give their money to investment managers who don't put it in mutual funds but invest it directly, they're required under ERISA to tell their investors how they vote their proxies. But in the case of mutual funds, they were never required to tell their investors until now. And actually, the end of August, on August 30th, we will see for the first time how, and investors will see how their mutual funds voted during the proxy, during the year that ends June 30th.
I want to get to some of the reforms. I actually helped work on one a little bit, Sarbanes-Oxley, which I want to talk about, and basically how it is that corporations have power and how it is that we can control them. I want to get to our phones, though. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. If you like the numbers, it's 877-577-2667. Or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. What do you think? Do you think the corporations have too much power in America? Do you think they need to be reined in? Do you think shareholders need to have a vote to decide who runs the corporation? Or do you think that, you know what, this is the shareholders should be able to just go to sleep at night and the managers, you know, they're fine. We don't really need anyone to watch them and let them do as they may. 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Mike Garland.
Thank you very much. I think we have some super deep-seated systemic problems in the structure, politically and economically, in our corporations, the way they're laid out and designed. And there are obvious negative effects to the majority of the people that don't benefit from their positive, quote, financial decisions. I think a lot of people don't realize in this country that a lot of these powerful corporations, their CEOs are interlocked on boards of other corporations and integrated in a political system that's almost untouchable. It's almost like a mafia.
That's a good point.
Can I say something else?
Yeah, please. Give me your name. I forgot to ask for it.
Oh, my name's Armin.
I thought it was Armin.
I wonder how many people out there that, quote, listen to Fox and CNN and the, quote, mainstream alphabet medias for their, quote, news realize that... The high percentage of those eight pro-war against one or two pro-peace or diplomacy in this last environment over in Iraq realize that a lot of these companies, these media companies, are also heavily invested in the energy companies to stand to benefit and probably even, I'm assuming, but wouldn't be a surprise at all, defense contractors that benefit, too, from the progression of war and consuming energy, and the consolidation of the wealth and the benefit from those things. So I think that spoils it, and, it raises a real stink, and it doesn't get past the smell test.
Hang on, Armin. I want to ask Mike a question about what you say, and stay on it because I want to ask you some more. But, Mike, Armin makes a good point. Even our media, even the people that feed us the news, whether it's Fox News or even the mainstream news, ABC, CBS, NBC, they're all being controlled more and more by these big corporations. Has it always been this way, or is this something new, this consolidation, Mike?
I think on the scale that we're seeing it today, it's something new. And it certainly, from a public policy perspective, is a serious, serious concern, the consolidation.
Very negative.
Media concentration. I do want to speak to one of the other issues that the gentleman raised, but where he's absolutely correct about systemic problems. When you look at all of this speaks to conflicts of interest on boards and other things. And when you look at the corporate scandals and you see Enron, Tyco, WorldCom, you realize it wasn't just a few bad apples. There are systemic problems in the way corporate America is structured. And all of the people on whom shareholders rely were compromised because of conflicts of interest. So you had boards of directors that were compromised. You had external auditors that were making more money doing non-audit services, so the audits were compromised. You had investment analysts providing research and telling shareholders to buy companies that they thought were junk.
And when you say it's systemic, you mean it's the law's fault. It's the system's fault. It's, in other words, we actually encourage, by the way things are set up, fraud is actually rewarded, or at least
we allowed
the evolving and effective reality.
Go ahead, Armin.
It's become an evolving, effective reality that's negative to the tune of the systemic, deep-seated problems.
Armin, what do you think we should do about this?
Listen, it's so obvious now. We're going to have some people in our country, in our citizenry, in our society, that's going to have to be empowered, but not in a political sense the way that's been misused in the past. You know, I don't want to use that cute little catch-all phrase of Gingrich, you know, empower America and all this. Not like that. Not to personally benefit, but people that need to be referees and contain these runaway effective monopolies becoming what they are and being a real true detriment to the mass of society as they are.
Well, let me ask Mike about those referees.
Where's the attorneys? And you're an attorney in Washington.
I am an attorney.
Where are the attorneys? How come insurance companies can sell people insurance like they did me, and then when I end up in the hospital, my wife calls them to engage the policy, and they say they've changed it to $5,000 maximum? Can you believe that?
No, I can't believe that.
And they can get set there and say, well, we sent you notice. It's my word against theirs. We did not get a notice. I'll swear under any jury, whatever. But effectively, I try to get attorneys to take the case here in Sarasota, Florida, and they say, well, good luck. You know, insurance companies got a lot of money, a lot of power. Why are the attorneys? Look at all the attorneys we have in this country. You guys are the ones that should hold people accountable, especially corporations and people that abuse power in a monopolistic sense the way it's become in this culture of this country that's so detrimental and negative to the masses as a whole. It's destroying our economy.
Armin,
it's totally imbalancing the system. You guys are the power guys. You know, everything.
Well, Armin, let me agree with you. I think attorneys definitely do need to take more consumer cases, take them pro bono. By the way, I think you have a good case. If they told you there's a maximum and then they changed it on you. I don't think they're allowed to do that. No, because you paid a premium. So I'll tell you what. Tell you what you do. Go. You can talk to legal aid attorneys. You can also talk to some consumer unions, groups. I don't know what you have down in Florida so much, because I would be willing to bet that in Florida they really cut down on poor people's or even middle class people's rights to get free legal advice. But you know, I would take action absolutely down there, and there are some Florida, because I think you have a case. Absolutely.
Well, you know, I'll swear under any jury, any oath ever on the Bible. What I mean, absolutely.
I believe
you.
Hey, Armin, I need to get back to corporations, though.
They did not tell us that it was changed to $5,000.
I know.
We would have never kept up the premiums the way we did. We would have went looking for other coverage. But now they're telling me they're making it real hard for me because I got a pre-existing condition.
You know what, Armin? Just stand firm. Don't back down. You are right. They are wrong. And I wish you victory. Hey, thanks very much for your call. I appreciate that. Hey, Mike, I mean, we do have problems with corporations, not just insurance companies defrauding people. It seems to have happened with Armin. But, what about the watchdogs? I mean, the SEC is supposed to be watching over them, supposed to be protecting shareholder rights. Yet I remember when I was working in Congress just 2 years ago, the Democrats wanted to provide more funding for SEC lawyers to go after, you know, corporations stealing people's money and stuff, and the Republicans were against it. They didn't want to even fund the watchdogs. Has that been a real problem, Mike?
Well,
in terms of the watchdogs, do you think that
it has been. I mean, the SEC ultimately, I think, did get the money, and there was, even as you know, you worked on Sarbanes-Oxley?
Well, Sarbanes-Oxley was much better.
Yeah, I mean, but even post-Enron, there was momentum, but it was dying. It wasn't until WorldCom came that the political will was strongly there, I think.
But what I find interesting is that the work, for example, Elliot Spitzer is doing, Attorney General of New York, he is going places against corporations that the SEC isn't even touching. They're not even starting. Here you have this state attorney general doing a terrific job, where the SEC is really, you know, laying low.
Yeah, well, I think Elliot Spitzer is doing an absolutely terrific job for investors and extremely supportive of his efforts. The SEC has done some good things of late. I think the test now, and all eyes are on the SEC, because there is a very, very significant reform pending at the SEC, and that is, and this goes back to what we were speaking about earlier, where it is prohibitively expensive for shareholders to nominate their own candidates. There is a reform pending at the SEC now that would allow shareholders to include, under certain conditions, a short slate. This isn't about taking over corporations. It's about increasing the independence of their boards. It would allow shareholders to include up to two or maybe three nominees on the corporate proxy statement that the corporations send out. So you would be able to nominate a candidate to run for a board and distribute the information on that candidate using the company's resources. And
let me understand the proposal. The proposal is that if I want to run against Michael Eisner of Disney because I think he's doing a terrible job, then I notify the corporation and they put my name, Mark Levine, right there on the proxy statement for everybody? Or is it not quite that simple?
Well, there are much more significant hurdles involved. First of all, the SEC has put on a triggering event, at least in the current form, the proposed form, where either the company would have either received a withhold vote on a particular director of 35% or higher.
Okay, so 35% have to withhold their votes.
In year one. And then the following year, if that happens, if, quote, a triggering event, which in the SEC's language I think reflects some failure of the proxy process, then in year two, a group of shareholders, and currently I think it's a group with collectively holds 5% or more. So this is something that institutional shareholders could take advantage of. They could come forward and put names to the nominating committee, and the committee would be required to include those.
Okay. Mike, we have to go to a break. Look, I know a lot of this sounds technical to you folks. It's very technical to me as well. But the heart of the question is, you know, do corporations have too much control in our society, and how do we control them? I mean, shareholders own the corporations. They should be able to control them. They should be able to decide what happens. They should be able to vote out these terrible leaders. And one of the things I want to talk when we get back after the break is I want to talk about all these fancy terms which basically are a form of theft, whether it's golden parachutes or stock options. How is it that corporate directors and managers basically take their fingers, dip it in the corporation, grab a bunch of money, put it in their pockets, and run home free? And how could shareholders stop that? And if you want to call and ask your question, here's your chance to do so. Hey, Mike Garland's only here for the first half of the hour, so if you want to get a question to him, you need to call in now. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com, and we'll be back right after this.
Time for another edition of The Lifestyles of the Rich and Cranky. The Richie Rich said is facing a terrible dilemma. The Summer Olympics are being held in Greece this year, and naturally, corporate CEOs want to be there and be part of the globe-hopping celebrity scene that swirls around such sporting galas. But gosh darn it, officials are warning that terrorists might make the Olympics a target. Of course, the government is providing a massive security force, including 40,000 police, 7,000 military troops, NATO jets, spy planes, and submarines. But the super wealthy swells of corporatedom are not about to accept the same security level that commoners get. So how can they feel extra special safe? Where there's money, there's always a way. And corporations are resolving their CEOs' Olympic security dilemma by buying luxurious protection packages for them. Top honchos of such outfits as American Express, Citigroup, and McDonald's will stay not in swank hotels, but in specially outfitted yachts to be anchored in the harbor near Athens. Thus, if there's a terrorist attack on the Olympic site, the yachts can flee with their elite passengers. Citigroup, for example, has leased a luxury ship that includes everything from armed guards to a yoga studio for its Olympic-bound executives. At $150,000, it's a pricey deal. That's $150,000 a day, and that doesn't even include fuel for the yacht or food and drink. Another corporate package provides a yacht and onboard security, plus helicopters, bodyguards, armor-plated limousines, and a motorcycle escort to get the special ones to and from the Olympic contests. Guess who gets to subsidize this high-life security cocoon for CEOs? You and me. The corporations will deduct the yacht packages from their income taxes, claiming them to be a necessary cost of doing business. This is Jim Hightower saying, these guys get the gold medal for Olympic-level excess.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of Well Patch. Well Patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a Well Patch.
Well Patch, it brings you back to Well Patch.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about corporations. Do they have too much power in America? What do you think? 877-57-SCOOP. And if so, how do we rein them in? I'll tell you, it was fortuitous. We had our advertiser, Jim Hightower, and he was saying in the commercial about corporations and corporate execs, they want to go to the Olympics. And after all, why should they be denied? It clearly helps Mobile and Exxon and BMW and Sony and GE and McDonald's. It definitely helps their products for their CEOs to go to the Olympics, right? I mean, it definitely makes us buy more hamburgers. So they get to go, and they pay for these hundreds of thousands of dollars of bodyguards and private yachts and all of this. And, well, we foot the bill. Shareholders make less money as part of corporate profits. Maybe we pay more for our McDonald's hamburgers or our Coca-Cola or really anything we buy from corporations. And my guest, Mike Garland, who's with the AFL-CIO, has studied this. And I guess the ultimate question, Mike, is how do we stop this kind of abuse?
Well, I think you have to restore accountability to the boardroom. It's a collective action problem. CEOs have been able to run their corporations as they saw fit and pick their directors, and boards were never particularly concerned about shareholders because it's difficult for shareholders to organize and have voice. And you've seen, I think, we've seen in the past couple of years, and this is one of the issues that we work with. We bring our funds, a pension fund sponsored by unions affiliated with the AFL, together and try and solve the collective action problem and begin to restore some accountability and rein in executive, you know, runaway CEO pay, which is really at the heart of a lot of...
Yeah, but Mike, has it always been this way? If we've always had these laws that basically make it hard for shareholders to intervene in corporations, why haven't we seen more runaway fraud and abuse before now?
Well, I think the increase... There are a whole series of factors. One is this short-termism in terms of a whole group of investors who began to play the market as short-termers and create an incentive structure where, short-term price or share price spikes were what people were looking for, and CEOs were compensated.
Is it stock options? I mean, I know that we've had more stock options recently. And what stock options are basically is they give you a price where you can buy stock, and so if you've got a short-term spike, and we all know, share prices go all over the map. So if it's 20, and then one day goes up to 40, and then you sell your shares, you can make a huge fortune if you're a CEO, and then the next day it can go back down to 20, and that's it.
And there are all kinds of things that CEOs have done legally.
And he had shares of Harkin Energy, and he knew the company was going into the pot, and he was warned several times that the company was gonna have to shut down its enterprises because it had no money to fund it. And he did disclose this information to the public. He used that inside information, sold hundreds of thousands of dollars of shares, did it within a week, of getting this letter, and was not punished in the least. The SEC, while his dad was president, looked... Well, Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing corporations. Namely, do they have too much power? And if they do, who controls them? My guest was Mike Garland. He's with the AFL-CIO. And he had to go. But basically, his point was that shareholders think they get to elect boards of directors, but they don't. The way it works is really it's like a little scheme here. The directors choose the managers choose the directors, and the shareholders, even if they vote to withhold their vote, even if they vote basically against the management, it doesn't matter because they vote against the guy, and he still gets to stay in office. It's really quite a scam. They vote to withhold their votes. And then unless they come to the shareholders' meeting, the guy still stays in power. So these people scam millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars from us, hard-earned, you know, people working their daily lives. They fire thousands of workers, and they get to live in their yachts and golden parachutes. And it's always struck me that this is a scandal that is so in front of our faces, it's so before our eyes, that we don't even notice it. We don't even notice the scandal going on. We're so used to corporations and CEOs making hundreds of millions of dollars, even as their companies fail. We're so used to shareholders not having power over them that these people, and you got to remember, a lot of them give millions of dollars to the Republican Party. Look at Ken Lay, head of Enron. He gave more money to George Bush than any other single person or corporation or anybody. He gave $1 million to George Bush. And, of course, then he went and he got that money, stealing it from workers' pensions, stealing it from just grabbing it. And guess who's never given it back? George Bush has never given it back. So we have this scandal. It's before our eyes. It's not called a scandal because it's just the way it works. It's just the way practice is. And I got to tell you, when I worked in Congress, I remember when the Sarbanes-Oxley bill came through after the Enron scandal, and Senator Sarbanes of Maryland really wanted some very strong proposals, really wanted some very strong reforms. And his reform idea was that exactly what Mike said. If you are going, if you're an accountant and you want to run you want to help audit a corporation to find out if they're cheating or stealing anything or not, that you shouldn't be able to sell things to that same corporation. You shouldn't be able to sell services to someone you're auditing. It'd be kind of like a cop saying, well, I get this, you know, he goes up to the criminal and he says, can I buy some drugs from you? Can I buy some drugs from you? It won't change my opinion on whether or not you're guilty or not. I just, you know, I want to get some stuff on the side. It's a real scandal, and it's a scandal particularly, I think, because no one talks about it. And I don't know why that is. Why do you think that the corporations own so much, control so much, and yet few people even discuss it? We're so used to it that no one's even discussing it. I don't have an easy answer. Maybe you do. The number's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. I have a caller on the line. It's Don from Atlanta. He was calling before the break. Don, do you think people even know this exists?
Well, they know it when their value of stocks go down and they read the negatives in the papers, but that's too late. I mean, the horse is out of the stall. But tell me this, how could the investigative reporting Wall Street Journal, how could Elliot Spitzer, how could the Securities and Exchange Commission not have any idea how much Dick Grasso was being paid for the 5 or 6 years before the scandal broke?
Well, you know what, let me explain this because you and I know what you're talking about, but some of the listeners may not. Dick Grasso was the board of directors actually ran the New York Stock Exchange. I forget what they call it, the CEO or manager or whatever of the New York Stock Exchange, and was being paid hundreds of millions of dollars. And Don's right. No one even seemed to be able to figure out how much he was being paid. Now this is the guy who should typify the problem. I mean, he runs this stock exchange, which has all these corporations on it, and why don't we know this stuff? I think the answer is that people. The fox have been guarding the hen house. I mean, the SEC is sorely underfunded. The lawyers there, and in fact, I got to credit the Sarbanes bill because I do think that did help some of the funding. But, you know, the Republicans have been opposing it every step of the way. For example, Sarbanes-Oxley really needs to just be called Sarbanes because I know for a fact that Michael Oxley opposed this bill. George Bush opposed this bill and only became law because the Enron scandal hurt so many people.
Right, and he thinks it's going to be overturned by the Supreme Court on top of that.
Well, we'll see.
Well, that's right. But one other thing, though, on Dick Grasso, though, you would think that regulators would have to fill out all type of government paperwork, which would state all the top management of the New York Stock Exchange, which is supposed to be there looking out for the investor, the average investor, not is supposed to regulate the big companies, but the big companies are the ones that set his salary. So I think the government was in on this. I think the newspapers looked the other way, including New York Times. Of course, they had to report it once the scandal broke, but I don't understand anybody could not have been asking these questions for years and years before it happened. I mean, when you have Dick Grosso sitting on the board of Home Depot, and also the man that was on Home Depot's director sitting on New York Stock Exchange board, and they set his salary, then he looks the other way for all these scandals you've been talking about occur under his watch. Then you can see that to me is very criminal, and I'm glad Dick Grosso is fighting this only because it'd been easy to give up the money and kept $60 million and give up $140 million. Now he's going to fight it all the way out, and the public's going to see in trial, unless some settlement comes up, they're going to see really how things worked, and they're going to demand changes in laws after this. When they see the incestuous relationship between management and board and the government's failure, I think there's going to be charges. But you talk about how these people make millions of dollars and the companies lose money. I think that's the definition of top management. They get their money off the top, and then everything else comes second.
Yeah, well, that's or you could call it trickle-down economics,
exactly.
Basically.
That's, that's Republican. You can get right there, trickle-down.
Well, exactly.
Plus now, Mark, if you want to get involved in those $100 million deals, you have to start going out and playing golf at Republican.
That's what I see, you know, but that's the problem. But, see, but you know, I don't know. I can't bring my friends. They probably won't allow me. They don't allow Jews a lot of these places. They don't allow blacks. They don't allow gay people.
Even Augusta down here in Georgia has finally broken that barrier.
Do they allow women now?
Not women, but this is a
not women.
But you know,
so they allow Jews, but not women. You know what? I have no problem going to any country club that denies anyone. But you're absolutely right. That is how they. You know, it would help if my father were president. Then I get a nice bailout from Saudi Arabians. You know, I understand that they'll bail out any company as long as your daddy's president. I mean, you know, one of the interesting things that never gets discussed in the press is you know, George Bush's brother, Neil Bush.
Oh, sure.
Who stole hundreds of millions of dollars from the American taxpayer in the savings and loans crisis. He's a guy, this is a sweet guy, Neil Bush. Here's a guy, he's in his hotel room, he's a married man, he gets a knock on the door, and there is a woman from Thailand. He knocks on the door, he doesn't ask any questions, he has sex with her, she leaves. Again, I don't get these knocks on my door, but he doesn't ask questions. So they asked him under oath that in the divorce proceedings, they said, "Well, did you think she was a prostitute?" And he said, "Well, yeah, that crossed my mind." He said, "Do you think somebody may have paid for it?" He said, "Well, yeah, I guess that crossed my mind. Did you ever ask who paid for it?" No, I never really asked.
Mm-hmm. He was probably just, you know, listening to his good buddy Dick Morris, and Dick Morris knows his way around those things.
Well, I guess he does. It's amazing to me that more Americans aren't upset at the incredible, I mean, you know, John Edwards talked about two Americas, a rich America and a poor America. What about this super rich? What about these people that really, you know, it'd be one thing if they actually made a good product. You know, I mean, I realize there are some decent CEOs. You know, Bill Gates, for whatever problems I have with Microsoft, and I got problems with Microsoft, clearly he's an intelligent man. He put the company together. We can talk about monopoly or not, but clearly he made a lot of profits for his corporation. So I grant him that. But you got lots of CEOs. Again, Michael Eisner is maybe the best example at Disney, where he gets paid hundreds of millions of dollars while the company loses tens of billions of dollars.
I think under the time he's been the CEO, that he's made more net income than the entire Disney company has.
That's probably true, because the company's been at a loss.
Well, he was at something like $790 million in the last 9 years. And Dick Grosso is the same way. He actually, his total compensation in the last 7 years was 90% of the net that the entire New York Stock Exchange, the billions of dollars they brought in, that they actually netted out.
And, of course, the real scandal is that Dick Grosso is supposed to be a watchdog. The New York Stock Exchange is supposed to be regulating these people, but how are they going to regulate it if they're playing a part in it? Can anyone out there explain to me why it is that this hasn't been a bigger scandal? Is it because everyone wants to be CEOs? Number's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can dial the numbers, 877-577-2667, or send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. Why isn't this a big scandal? I mean, you know, this has been going on for years. This has been going on for decades. It's gotten worse, no question about it. But are Americans just accepting the fact that corporations and you can just steal that? If you're, because I got to tell you, people get upset. people get upset when you find that, oh, someone was on welfare and they got a disability check and, you know what, they weren't quite as injured as they claimed they were, and so they bilked the government out of $100 a month. And by the way, I don't support that. I don't support people cheating on welfare. But you see all the Republicans, oh my God, this woman with three children to feed, trying to pay her rent, she bilked the government out of $100. $100. But, you know, Dick Grasso or Michael Eisner, $790 million, that's not that big a deal. He needed his 17th yacht, and he only owns two small islands. Why do Republicans never complain about people stealing hundreds of millions of dollars when they're going around complaining about people stealing hundreds of dollars?
Well, part of that is Republicans passed and weakened a lot of laws in the 90s. Clinton vetoed several accounting laws, and they finally were able to get an override. In fact, I think Chuck Schumer was behind that override, and that's the only thing I can think negative on his record. Of course, I'd like to hear his response. But he was the co-sponsor and led some Democrats to override Clinton's second veto for tougher accounting laws, which was really setting the stage. If they get caught, the penalties will be not criminal, and they'll be civil, and they'll be very much diminished. That happened about 1996 or 97.
I'll tell you what happened then.
I guess they had to see that the economy was going to eventually overheat, and you're going to have this bubble
bursting. Now, I'll tell you what happened.
Bursting.
Arthur Levitt was the chair of the SEC at that time, and he was
That's
a good
right.
man, and he very much thought that you shouldn't have foxes guarding the hen house. If you have accounting firms that are auditing companies for them, you shouldn't be able to sell services. And you're absolutely right. Chuck Schumer was on the wrong side of that. I'll tell you, Joe Lieberman was too. And I think the answer – and by the way, I don't mean to pick out those two – all the Republicans were on the wrong side of that, and so were several Democrats like Schumer and Lieberman. And I think the reason is because who gives money in New York to political campaigns?
Mm-hmm.
Big corporations. Who gives money in Connecticut? Big insurance companies. These politicians, even our guys, even the Democrats, to some extent, are owned by these corporations because we don't have public financing of campaigns.
Right.
And the only way to ever stay competitive in a race to get these hundreds of millions of dollars is to rely on these corporations. And so, yeah, even they sold out. Hey, Don, I appreciate your call. Thanks for staying on so long.
Okay, Mark, I enjoyed it.
I want to get to another caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from?
It's me. It's Armin.
Welcome back, Armin.
Yeah, you know that gentleman that you just had on?
Yeah.
The one that talked on and on and on and on and on?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the deal. If he'll come forth and if he'll admit that he's George W. Bush's bicycle mechanic, and if he'll recall everything he said in the last 10 minutes per word, tell him I'll seriously consider voting for him, but still not George.
What, you talking about the guy I had on 2 days ago or the guy I had on just now?
The guy you had on just now that went on and on and on and on and on and on and on.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to tap my callers. He met well. He had a lot of good facts. He talked about Dick Grasso, which is a good point, the guy at the New York Stock Exchange. So I'm not going to attack him. But, hey, Armin, thanks for calling back. I appreciate that.
But is he George Bush's bicycle mechanic?
I don't think he's George Bush's bicycle mechanic. I really don't think so.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Armin. Hey, look, if you want to call in, we only got a few minutes left. It's 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. I got an email from Gordon, Smiths Creek, Michigan, one of my regular listeners. And Gordon writes, "Hi, don't world corporations transcend the rules and constraints of individual countries? What are the real contingencies of the global economy? Who are the true power brokers on this planet today? Countries? Corporate conglomerates? Shadowy corporate alliances?" It's a good question, Gordon. I think that there is a lot of a strong international component to a lot of what goes on in corporations today. It's not just a question of what American corporations are doing, although, after all, we own the most resources. We control American corporations are probably the most powerful. But you're absolutely right. A lot of it is just chasing wealth. And so it is international. So you find that one of the richest men in the world is the Sultan of Brunei. Not because he's brilliant, but because he controls a country that has a large oil supply. And that makes him very rich. That's how Saudi Arabia gets all their money. So there's a lot of stuff going around in the global economy. And a lot of that globalization, what it does is it enables riches to be passed to a fewer number of people. What it does is if you go to Thailand, for example, and you get 9-year-olds making Nikes, at, 20 cents an hour, if that, then again, you can use them and the money floats up to the very top, and then it can, so there's no question that the globalization has made things worse. And largely it's made things worse because it's meant that the labor standards go to the very bottom, to child labor, to things like that, while the, you know, the money goes to people who are on Greek islands and doing those kinds of things. And we found, I think, with most of the outsourcing in Bangalore, India, it's the same thing. We find that people are going to these lower price countries. But what interests me is that globalization never seems to work the same way when you have Republican interests at stake. For example, tobacco. We still subsidize tobacco in this country. You know, here this drug kills 400,000 Americans a year. We still subsidize the thing. It's our biggest export. Marlboro cigarettes makes lots of money for American corporations. We sell them to China, get them hooked on things. That, you don't want to see, Republicans don't want to cut down on that. They don't want to cut down on tobacco subsidies. The other thing they don't want to cut down on is subsidies to our pharmaceutical companies. Now, they want to outsource labor to make Nike shoes, but they don't want to outsource, for example, to allow us to buy drugs from Canada, which would also save a lot of money. So you find that this outsourcing, this globalization is something the Republicans support, they claim to, when it comes to American jobs, but when it comes to those Republican corporations, they're not going to do it. Thanks for your email, Gordon. Hey, we got about a minute left. I want to tell you about the show tomorrow because I think it's a shocking and important show. Tomorrow, I'm going to have on the air the supervisor of elections in Tallahassee, Florida. And he is going to tell us that they're up to it again, folks. No, Catherine Harris isn't doing it. She's in Congress now, having succeeded in her fraud. But the Florida state government is again purging tens of thousands of African Americans from the voter rolls, claiming they committed felonies. Most of them are not felons. It's the same mistake they made in 2000, except it looks like it's not a mistake at all. It looks like they are absolutely intentionally doing their best to scrub as many blacks off the Florida voter rolls as they can just in time for election 2004. Are you surprised that you haven't heard this on the mainstream media? Well, you're going to hear it here on the Inside Scoop tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 Central, 1 Mountain, and noon Pacific. And when you do hear it, and when you do get the facts on the Inside Scoop, I hope you will tell people in the mainstream media this is a big story. We care if they scrub voter rolls. And also, if you'll go and tell your friends. Tune in tomorrow. You won't want to miss that on the Inside Scoop.